The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Well, I think it's a data-dependent decision. I wouldn't want to prejudge what's going to happen at the meeting. I don't know. I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen at the meeting at this point. And that's the way it should be. I think the chairman will lay down some options when we get closer to the meeting, and we'll see what happens at that point. So that's where we are. And the data has, I think been a little bit mixed just recently. But generally speaking, I would say that the question of whether labor markets have improved since last year, I think they have improved since last year on our traditional measures, which would be non-farm payroll employment and unemployment. Those are both looking better than they were last year at this time. But, you could look at other aspects of labor markets which don't look so great, like employment to population ratio or labor force participation. Still, I think by our traditional measures, labor markets have improved. Inflation is running low, and for that reason, I've kind of been arguing that, we don't have to be in any hurry. We can take our time. We don't really have an inflation problem on our hands right now anyway. And so for that reason, I think there's kind of, there's a decision to make, I guess, in September.
Is it all dependent on the August jobs data then?
I think that'll be an important report, and one of the things that happens in the jobs report is that you get revisions to past data, so we'll keep an eye on that as well. But still, if you did the comparison from last year, even if this report came in a little bit weaker, if you did the comparison to last year, unemployment's lower. Job growth has been stronger than it was. In that sense, labor markets are looking better.
Jim, you just said that it is not a foregone conclusion what's going to happen in September.
Well, the other thing about that is that, what's the gradation of exactly what would be put on the table for what the committee could do? There are many possible things that the committee could do, and the chairman's going to have to make a judgment about, how he wants to play that. So we'll see.
Financial markets are certainly looking for tapering in September. Would you be concerned that if there was nothing,
yes,
no announcement?
They're treating it like a binary decision of, do nothing versus go ahead. And the way committees operate is they usually split the difference. We'll see what happens. But it will be, as far as what the final object is that's on the table at the September meeting, it will be data dependent.
Well, Jim, the minutes seem to say that the majority is on board with tapering, quote unquote, later this year.
Right.
Does that mean the majority right now is seeing just that? September, October, November, December, doesn't really matter. But absent data that say, oh no, the economy's really weaker, that there is an inclination now, there's enough strength, enough inflation to go ahead and take the step before the end of the year.
Right, and I think that the minutes, do a good job of sort of characterizing the discussion around the table, and that's what they're designed to do, so I think that's a fair reflection. One thing I've been concerned about is this press conference issue. We do not have a press conference in October, and when I see you guys reporting on when we're, going to make a decision, it's always September or December. Why not October?
Well, that's the point. There doesn't need to be a press conference for a decision, does there? There could be an extraordinary press conference.
We have done that kind of thing in the past, and we could do that. Usually that sort of action off the normal cycle is reserved for special situations where, there's been a lot of, say, turmoil in financial markets or something like that. And I'm not sure the committee be prepared. I wouldn't want to prejudge it, but I'm not sure the committee be prepared to take special action in between a meeting or something like that.
Therefore,
so what I'd be most concerned about, and what I'd like to see the FOMC do, is have a press conference at every meeting, because you want to have every meeting on look ex ante identical, so that you, if you want to take action there or not, you can do so, and you don't have this sort of on-off cycle that we have right now.
One of the things you said was that markets are treating it like a binary decision. So are you saying then that there could be potentially some tapering of treasuries but no tapering of MBS, that would be some kind of compromise?
Well, I wouldn't want to prejudge the options that the chairman might put out there, but there are many ways that you could You know, you could split up the amounts. You could have larger amounts, smaller amounts. You could have announcements indicating the committee's ideas about how fast this was going to occur. Is this going to occur if you start tapering? Does that mean you'd also taper again at the October meeting or not? Or would you wait till December? So there are many dimensions to this. And plus, you've got discussions about the policy mix. Maybe you could alter the policy mix in some way. So there's many sides
to this. For example?
Yeah,
by policy mix altering, what would that be?
Well, I think the minutes referred to this somewhat, where they said, you know, and there's been some talk in financial markets that you could taper some, but then you'd also strengthen the forward guidance in some way. One thing I've suggested as a possible way to go would be to have a lower threshold for inflation of 1.5%, so that the inflation thresholds would be symmetric, and then you would say something like, we're not going to raise the policy rate as long as inflation is running below 1.5%.
So would you be comfortable with that?
I would be comfortable with that, and I think it would make the, you know, it would complement the fact that we have a 2.5 upside on the inflation rate, and then you'd put a 1.5 on the low side, which would be a way of saying, you know, we are serious about defending the inflation target from the low side, and we expect inflation to be close to target, both, you know, both from above and from below.
Regarding inflation, the inflation target, you dissented a couple meetings ago, and it had to do with inflation and the level of inflation. Then you came back on board, or at least you didn't dissent at the following meeting. What is your thinking? Has the FOMC come around to your view that, as you just were mentioning, how important inflation is on both sides of the bound? Has the FOMC, has the discussion moved more in your direction now?
Well, I dissented at the June meeting. At the next meeting, we did add some language, stronger language on inflation, and I thought that was appropriate, and so I was satisfied with the outcome at that meeting, and I went along with the majority there. And you know, the notion is very much that we are keeping an eye on the low inflation numbers. I would say something like a 1% inflation rate measured from a year ago on PCE is about as low as I'd like to see it go. If it starts going below that, then I think deflation risk starts to go up, and you start to, you know, have more problems. The markets start to question your credibility and whether you're really going to defend your inflation target on the low side. So we're not at that level yet. We're, you know, a little bit above 1%, so I think we're okay for now. And you know, I agree with the committee's projection that probably inflation rates will go back toward 2% in the coming months and quarters. But I'd like to see that happen. And we've only seen a little bit of data since July on that, which was the CPI data, and it was a little bit more.
Where
indicative.
Do you see inflation for the rest of the third quarter and into the fourth quarter, and where would it come from?
Well, that's a little bit what I'm worried about, is that we don't have a good theory of why are we getting these low inflation numbers in an environment where we're saying the economy's strengthening and it's going to be a stronger economy in the second half of the year and going into 2014. And so that's why I'd like to be cautious on this issue, because this has surprised the committee to the downside in the first half of the year relative to what we were forecasting, say, in January or late last year.
What do you see for the economy now? And I want to note, too, that you mentioned recently that the Fed's policies have tended to be over-optimistic. And I know when we spoke 2 or 3 years ago, you, like a lot of people, were thinking that the economy was going to pick up, and then many headwinds, Europe, so many things going on. What are you looking for GDP growth? What are you looking for unemployment over the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, I haven't redone my forecast. We'll go through that process as we get close to the September meeting, and so I don't have specific numbers for you today because I haven't taken on board a lot of the data that's come in the last several weeks. But generally speaking, I agree with the contours of the forecast that say that the second half should be stronger than the first half, and 2014 should be stronger than this year. I guess what I was saying about these forecasts is that type of forecast qualitatively speaking, has been the same over the last 3 years, and it's been wrong repeatedly over that time period. So that makes me a little nervous about making policy just based on forecasts alone. I would like to complement that with some actual data that comes in and says, oh yeah, things really do look stronger, and therefore that's warranting us pulling back some of the accommodation that we were otherwise providing.
Would it be an option at all for there to be no tapering between now and the beginning of the year and still for have the process finished by the middle of next year?
I don't know. I don't know if that's where the committee would come out, but that shows you, how much flexibility there could be in this process. I mean, you could do this a lot of different ways. And I guess what I'm mostly advocating is that since inflation's low, we don't have to be in any hurry. Might as well wait, get some more data, and then we can decide how to move later in the year and into next year.
Is it providing any more stimulus to the economy, though? Is there any benefits to continuing it?
My assessment is that QE is quite potent as a tool, and I guess we're going to see a paper on that here today. But my basic argument has been that, I'll just put it in blunt terms, if you're watching financial markets over the last 3 years, you have to be blind to see that this has not been sort of wildly important in financial markets, not just here in the United States, but across the world. Now, whether those types of financial market impacts link up to the real economy in a way that we would like is a good question, and that's a subject of a long academic debate that goes back 40 or 50 years and has never really been, satisfactorily resolved. But as far as conventional easing of monetary policy, I think QE is very successful in that dimension, more successful than forward guidance. I think forward guidance is a tricky game that's very difficult to play. I think that's the lesson that I took from Mike Woodford's paper here at Jackson Hole last year. He spent about 30 pages describing all kinds of different central banks in different situations and how they had used forward guidance, and he's sort of saying, well, it didn't work here, and this kind of commitment wasn't quite the right one, and all this kind of thing. And so the lesson I took from that is forward guidance is a very tricky business. QE is simple, easy to understand, has clear effects in financial markets. So in that sense, I've come down more on the QE side than many, probably.